Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Jerry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness, responding to your email questions, and we'll be taking your calls. So keep it tuned here and we'll be right back. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How's it going?
It's going so well.
Great.
And you?
Good.
Good.
I just heard that we're putting a real challenge on the phone line at World Talk.
I know. Isn't that good news?
That's exciting, huh?
Yeah, let's encourage people all over the world to call in and see. No, let's see. We don't want to do that. Our engineer was already sounding a little like he needed three or four more hands.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So we don't want to challenge him too much, but having all the lines full, that's a good thing.
It's a lot of fun.
It is.
To me, it's that Sangha experience of practice, of everybody just jumping in and, this is what's going on with me.
That's right. In fact, people have, I think, in their inbox today, the 20th email, which is just our code for it because it comes out on the 20th of the month, but that message from me. And what it's based on is being at group, meditation and group discussion at the monastery on Sunday morning. And I, because I was going to write that email, I asked people, if they would talk about practice, because I was supposed to write this thing on practice. And so I thought, well, why not have some people who practice give me some inspiration? Huh?
Yeah.
Take advantage of a situation whenever you can.
Yeah.
And so the question went out about practice, and I swear, every set of hands in the room jumped up, and it was so exciting. And it's the same kind of feeling when here we are, we're ready to have the conversation. There are all these people wanting to participate in the conversation. It's Sangha at its best.
Yes, yes. And I hate to delay them for long, but there are a couple things that I wanted to mention.
Uh-huh. What's that?
And one is this wonderful program called Reflective Listening Buddies.
Yes.
Yes.
So, I can't even remember when that launched, but several months ago now, I guess.
Yeah.
And we wanted to kind of do it as a pilot, so we did kind of a low-key thing with it. And now, after these months, they have enough people trained. Again, it's amazing. It's all over the world. Now, it's not like we have huge numbers of people participating from all, countries all over the world, but we have some. And so it's something that we had a call last week from Sweden.
Yeah.
It was Sweden, wasn't it?
Yes, on the radio show. Yeah.
Yeah. And so somebody in Sweden could participate in this. We have people from Japan and Great Britain and places like that. So it's now there are enough people trained in this process of reflecting one another. So you and I are going to do it. And we have a date, 5 o'clock Tuesday evening.
Yeah.
And then we get together and we decide, you want to go first or I'll go first. And so you're going to go first. So you talk for 15 minutes and I reflect you.
Yes.
I think it's 15 minutes, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Yeah. And then, and that's all. I don't give you advice or try to fix your life or anything. I just listen to you and reflect back what it is that you're looking at, and then we change roles.
Yeah.
And we can do this once a week, and we can actually have more than one person to practice with, and it's just a great program, and they're ready now to open it up to more folks.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, if people are interested, they can go on the website and contact us and say, I want a buddy.
Yeah.
And then the training, there's a little training process that happens, and then you get paired up with somebody who is experienced, and then you become adept at it, and then you get paired up with somebody else, and it's just a very, very fun support for awareness practice.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Can I give a short personal plug for it?
Uh-huh.
To me, one of the beauties of reflective listening is it feels like the listener doesn't get in the way of my process.
Uh-huh.
So as much as I'm willing to look and keep going, the reflection doesn't stop any of that.
So you can go as far as you want with it because the person who's listening to you and reflecting you is not getting in the way, is not stopping that.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's a really beautiful thing about it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so I hope, especially for people who don't have a big support system close around them, you know, if you're right next to a sitting group or something like that, then there's that kind of support. But an awful lot of people feel like they're kind of out there on their own, and this is a wonderful way to connect.
Yes. If you can get to a phone, you can get to a buddy.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Sherry, there's one other thing I wanted to mention as well, which is an exciting event that's coming up in mid-May.
Uh-huh.
In Palo Alto, which is the Living Compassion annual celebration.
Yes. Something that we get pretty wound up about, huh?
Oh, it's a lot of fun.
It's a party.
It is a party.
So on that day, and I think it's 5 to 7 in the evening, isn't it?
7 to 9.
7 to 9?
7 to 9.
Oh, better yet.
Yep.
Then we get together and we hear all about what Living Compassion has accomplished in the last year and what's coming up ahead in the year to come and celebrate all of that and just be together and enjoy ourselves.
Yes, yes. I expect there'll be some wonderful presentations and good food and good energy.
Yes. Now, there are probably people listening to this at a distance who think, that's lovely, but I'm not going to get on an airplane and fly to Palo Alto for 2 hours on a Wednesday evening. It
yes.
is Wednesday, isn't it?
Thursday.
Well, I'm close on all of this. See, I would have been there from 5 to 7 on
Wednesday.
And it just wouldn't have been good.
Yeah.
And we're going to do something very, very exciting this time, and that is that we are going to have this available on the how would you frame it?
We're going to do a webcast of the event.
A webcast.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in real time, people will be able to watch on their computer the whole proceedings and hear it as well.
And be right there with us and a part of it. So we're hoping that people will get together in little groups and watch together and have little celebration parties wherever they are and join.
Yes.
Join in.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we were just talking about that today and that we're going to do a run-through, you know, a rehearsal at some point. So we'll let people know when that's going to be and we'll just do a kind of a group and make sure all the technology is in place, and then we'll be all set for May 17th.
Wonderful.
People can be there in person. That's definitely our first choice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to talk to some callers?
Yes.
Okay. I'd like to welcome Greg from Ontario, Canada. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening, Greg.
Hello. Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
I'm just calling in just to get your thoughts on something.
Okay.
I work as a pastor of a church congregation.
You work as what?
A pastor of a church congregation.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I love my work, but working with a community of people, there's a lot of conflict.
Yes.
And I find I obsess about the conflict. And if there's a conflict between people within the leadership of the congregation, or I'm somehow involved as pastor, or if I'm chairing whatever group that the conflict's happening in, I find my mind just turns it over and over and over again.
Uh-huh.
Trying to find a solution, even if it's like my day off with my family, and
uh-huh.
that's a problem. And I find there's bodily sensations that go with it, like pit of my stomach dropping out, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
I try to rationalize it and say, well, you know, in the scheme of things, this is small potatoes. But I find it's that my mind turns it over and over, or it keeps bringing my attention and focus back to it.
Uh-huh. And so, the result of that is unpleasant.
The living through that time is when it's doing that is feels unpleasant. Yeah.
And does it feel like there's any benefit to it?
Sometimes, like my mind, like sometimes I'll think of something that's helpful in the long run, but I question whether or not I would have thought of that anyway if I hadn't been obsessing about it.
Yeah, yeah. So let me ask you this. Is your orientation to life, does that include God?
Well, I'm kind of close to where you guys are coming from, actually.
Okay, okay. So we can go with the trusting life.
Yes, please.
Kind of way. Okay, good. I mean, not good, but that's a you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But it makes translating easier.
Exactly.
So that's a real difficulty for us, isn't it? Because on the one hand, everything that we have given our lives to says we don't need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not up to us. We don't need to noodle things. Our conditioned
right.
minds are not going to. They create problems. They're not the solution, and they're not going to find the solution to the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, conditioning uses our sincerity, our sense of responsibility, our concern, our desire to do a good job. Against us,
yeah.
In that sense of, okay, well, this is something that if you're going to be a responsible person, you need to be looking at this. You can't just go off on a day off, go off with your family and forget all about this like it's not important or it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so for me, it really is, you know, there's nothing that you need to be convinced of, right? Because you agree completely with the notion that it's not up to you. The answers are there when the answers are there. And our job is to come back to center, be as present as we can be, and be, in the moment, the difference that we want for the world.
Right.
Yeah, so you want to be the one standing in that place of no conflict, conscious, compassionate acceptance for everyone and everything exactly as is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because if you didn't agree with all of that, then it's a different discussion, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. But you do. So you know that that's true and that's the answer and like that. And so it really does become a matter of directing your attention.
Right.
And the thing that you probably already practiced, but my favorite is to let that anxiety, because I imagine the solar plexus is pretty engaged in all of this.
Where is the solar plexus?
It's right there at the bottom of the ribs.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, it's the third chakra.
Uh-huh.
It's usually the place where people feel anxiety. It's kind of the when your stomach goes into, not low in the belly, but up there high.
Uh-huh.
So it's where people get butterflies and
yep.
nervous, and it gets in a knot, and you get kind of sick at your stomach and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, that's where the attention goes, because that's where the sensations are. And then that reminds you that, you know, there's the third chakra is kind of in a knot, and it reminds you that, oh, yeah, there's this issue, because your attention will wander,
yeah.
right? You're there, you're enjoying yourself, you're having, and then something triggers you back to, oh, my,
right.
what about that? What am I going to do about it?
Yeah.
And so using that process to bring you to the experience that you want to have. So there you are, and there's that, and the thoughts kick in, and you're right there in the middle of that conflict, and that signals you to come back to however you would frame that. I would say to a place of conscious compassion and awareness, to a feeling of peace,
yeah.
of acceptance.
Yeah.
Yeah? And so what you want to do is tune in to where you feel that acceptance and peace in your body so that you're really familiar with it. And you know some of the best ways to do that. Did you say family? You have kids?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, you can think about your family and how much you love them and how much you enjoy them. You can think about your favorite place in nature, you know, times when you felt really at peace and connected with life. And then you get a sense of where in your body you feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And you practice turning your attention to that place in your body and feeling that feeling. And it just begins to take you every time you turn your attention there. So we're using the same technique that pulls us away and into suffering.
Mm-hmm.
We're using that same process to bring us back to a sense of being present and at peace.
Mm.
Okay, so every time that kicks in, you think, okay, this is a time to come back to center.
Right.
You just kind of close your eyes, find that place in your body, feel that feeling of peace and connection, enjoy that for a little while, go on with your life.
Rather than trying to resist that, use it as a bell.
That's right. Yes, it's just a flag for you. Oh, right. And in that way, you know, it's quite wonderful because most of us who are doing awareness practice, the biggest difficulty is remembering to do it.
Right.
It's not that we're not willing. It's not that we don't want to. It's the day goes by, and we're all busy and engaged, and then at the end of the day, the little voice comes in and says, wow, you weren't present very much today. Oh, I forgot. So to have something like this that reminds you all day long,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like the parrot, you know, pay attention, pay attention, pay attention. And it can really be a service.
Right.
Instead of a misery.
Hmm. Neat. I look forward to giving that a try.
Yeah, well, let us know.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Thanks very much.
Good night.
Thanks, Terry. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Greg. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Barrett from San Francisco. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Hi. Sherry, I just got back from the monastery a few days ago.
Uh-huh.
I went to the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat with Jen and David.
Yes. How was that?
It was fabulous. It really
Good.
Was. I really enjoyed it. It's probably one of the best things I ever did for myself.
Excellent. That response is all we ask.
Yeah. And it's interesting how I came across you. I was taking a course in New York City. I'm just moving from New York City, taking a course with Andrew Cohen at Enlightened Next.
Oh, uh-huh.
He gave us access to the What is Enlightenment website, and I just listened to your clip, like 34-minute clip on that website about monastery practice, and it really just went right to my heart, and it was just open. I don't know, something opened up in me, and I was ready to do it right away.
Wonderful.
I guess I'm new to awareness practice of this type. I've been studying Mahayana Buddhism for a couple of years.
Uh-huh.
And I just have some issues that are coming up already with like new practice.
Uh-huh.
Fortunately, I'm on vacation right now, so that, you know, the things that are happening, the things I'm aware of aren't life and death, but it's still I'm noticing some things. What I've been trying to do is sit for 30 minutes in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I'm noticing is that the part of me that's willing, like the compassionate part of me that's willing to sit, is kind of bailing out after 25 minutes. It just seems like all the sub-personalities are like, yeah, that's fine, let's get out of here, you know. And that's one thing I've noticed. Another thing I noticed is that maybe for about 24 hours after the retreat, I was able to keep it going, kind of keep the Zen feeling going, but then after about 24 hours, I felt like I just wanted to slip back into all the conditioning things.
Oh,
like,
yes.
You know, like my iPod all the time and the computer, and,
mm-hmm.
and it just felt like a comfortable pair of shoes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I'm losing something by doing that. And then the only other thing that's been happening is that as I'm going through my day, I feel like there's a new character, like a new sub-personality that's sort of watching the whole thing all day long, and it's like a parental figure, kind of like saying, okay, kids, like, stop arguing, like when you're going on a long car trip or something. So these are all things that are coming up, and I was just wondering if you have any guidance or anything to hit you with a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I do have some thoughts on those subjects, and here they are. One of the things that big stumbling block, big difficulty that people have with sitting practice is that they let conditioned mind get them into an idea about what sitting is or should be. Now, I think, especially in the beginning, the best thing that sitting can do, sitting is always teaching us to come back here. Okay, that's a given. I mean, unless you just sit there and sleep. We notice where we are, we come back here. So we're learning to direct our attention. If we're lucky, we are learning to bring our attention back to a place of kindness. But for most people, that's down the road. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So that's one thing that it's always doing. Whether it feels like that's happening or not, it is. If you just sit on the cushion and make some kind of effort to stay awake, you will be altering your relationship with awareness and attention. But in the beginning, especially, use the sitting to notice, to see, and see through conditioned mind. So instead of letting conditioned mind convince you that after 25 minutes you're having a bad experience and that bad experience means you should get up, use that time to watch how conditioning does what it does, how it hooks you in, how you believe it, and how it's able to control you. Okay? So that's huge. Just disconnect from any willingness to listen to conditioned mind tell you what meditation is, what a good meditation is, what you're experiencing, and how it should be different.
So in other words, that 30 minutes happens no matter what. It's just that you just do not get up.
Well, I don't even subscribe to that.
Okay.
The thing that's important is to watch what's going on.
Right.
So even if you get up, don't let it cause you to lose consciousness.
Uh-huh.
So you watch how it becomes intolerable, how you just finally say, okay, whatever, I just have to. Because how it's doing that to you is how it's controlling your whole life, not just when you're on the...
Yeah, because it is like an analogy for my whole life. Like,
oh, yeah.
Sometimes,
oh, yeah.
Like, you know, not finishing a process, because it goes back to that deepest fear of, you know, of being successful.
Yeah.
Of shining.
Yeah, exactly. So all awareness practice is that relationship. You're centered, you're in conditioning. You're centered, you're in conditioning. You're centered, you're in conditioning. What is it like when you're centered? What is it like when you're in conditioning? What's the movement back and forth between the two?
Mm.
We're actually not going anywhere. Okay?
Yeah.
Always keep awareness practice in the list of things I want to do. So if you make it, I can't listen to my iPod, I can't be on my computer, I can't, you know, if conditioned mind turns awareness practice into a list of things that you can't do, that you really like to do, it's going to be, awareness practice is going to be a short timer in your life. Okay?
Yeah.
So the point is to watch all of it.
Yeah, just
are you listening to your iPod because it's what you want to be doing and you're there and you're present and you're conscious that that's going on?
Mm.
Or is it something that you're being, in a way, forced into so that you will go unconscious and be led to suffering?
Yeah, I think my relationship with the iPad has actually changed in the last few weeks.
Yeah. So, do you know my favorite Quaker story?
No, what's that?
William Penn converted to Quakerism when he was an adult, and went during the time that he lived. It was the attire, part of the attire for a gentleman to wear a sword.
Mm.
And one day he realized that, whoa, I have become a Quaker and I'm wearing a sword, a I've joined a non-violent religion, and I'm wearing an instrument of death every day.
Yeah, I think the Sikhs do that, too.
Yeah, and so he went to his teacher and said, you know, what should I do about this? And the guy said, wear it for just as long as you can. It's so incredibly wise.
Yeah.
Conditioning says, okay, here's a list of things that you have to do and not do if you're going to be a good spiritual person.
Right.
And then it starts watching you.
That's right.
So my encouragement is you watch you.
Mm.
You watch you as you do everything that you do and find out what you want to do and what you don't want to do. Because nothing is inherently anything or anything else.
Yeah, that's a much more compassionate approach to the whole thing.
Oh, and it, you know the best part of it? It works.
Mm. Yeah, because I think that the changes happen on their own as they're,
they do.
As they're watching. Yeah.
They do. They change on their own. You know, in the number of years that I've been doing this, I have never given up a single thing.
Mm.
Now, lots of stuff has fallen away.
Yeah.
I've never given anything up.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things you said on the What is Enlightenment website that got to me.
Oh, good.
Well, thank you so much. It's nice to meet you.
Thank you. It's lovely to meet you. Since you're a neighbor, I hope we see you often.
You sure will.
Good.
Okay.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Barrett. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We're going to take a quick break now, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Coming up next on Open Air in the second half of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have at least three callers lined up right now.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Trish from Chico, California. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Trish.
Thank you so much for making this program accessible and the practice accessible. It's been life-transforming for me.
Well,
so much
thank
gratitude.
You. Thank you. You know, we love doing it, and hearing that is just wonderful inspiration for us.
Yeah. Well, it's very obvious that you love doing it.
Oh, good. That we're not faking it here.
Yeah.
All right, good. What's going on in Chico, one of my favorite places on the planet?
Yeah, mine too. It's a beautiful day here, and I got home about 5 minutes to five from work, and I've never called before, and I thought I could do it.
Today is the day.
Yeah.
Good.
So here I am, and I've been waiting on hold and feeling nervous and then feeling centered and feeling what I call nervous. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's not nervous, but
excitement.
There's conditioned voices telling me you're stupid for calling, you're going to sound like you're inarticulate, you don't have an agenda, and it's just, so anyway, I'm proud of myself for just making the call anyway.
Oh yeah. And you know, when we hear what we're up against, the way you're describing it, and I bet there's nobody listening who doesn't recognize those voices. when we hear that miserable self-hating voice, it's a wonder we can ever do anything. It's completely heroic that we get out of bed and go about our lives every day.
It really is. Mm-hmm. It really is. And it's just, you know, when you say it that way, it's like, yeah, it is heroic. And, mm-hmm. and what have I done to deserve this? I mean, it seems like I try so hard, and the voices are just there a lot.
That's right. And that's a really good point. We're meant to believe that they're there because there's something wrong with you.
Right.
And what you get when you start paying attention is, no, actually, I'm a really good person. And no matter what I do and no matter how hard I try, they are there and they are just as abusive as ever. So I'm not sure that they have anything to do with me. Maybe they just have a life of their own, and somehow it got mixed up with mine. And I think that's far closer to the truth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, I've been sitting for, I guess, about 6 years, and I notice when I sit that it's easier for me to sometimes count the breath and just be with the breath, and yet sometimes I feel, and the voices are telling me that I should be looking more at whatever's going on with my life, and I can't seem to stay with looking, and of course I wander off like everybody does, but mm-hmm. but it's like coming back to the breath. A breath is a long time.
Yes, it is.
For me, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. We can go a lot of places in the length of a breath.
Yeah. But I try to feel what my body feels like when I'm breathing, mm-hmm. and you know, say the number, whatever it is, as I'm exhaling. But mm-hmm. even when I do that, I feel like I'm missing out on something.
Well, of course, it's a practice. And to me, what's going on is that you're learning, you're practicing having attention with awareness, and awareness with attention. And so attention is used to going about, wandering off, and doing all sorts of things. Awareness is awareness. You know, it's there, thank mm-hmm. God. And so as we practice, you know, you're counting and you're noticing, you're feeling your body sitting there and feeling the breath inside the body, and you're counting.
Mm-hmm.
And attention wanders off, and you bring it back, and you bring it back to those things. There's the body sitting there, and there's the breath, and you're counting. And you notice all of the places that it goes, the attention goes, and all of the things that it's drawn to, and you notice that. But you notice it in a way that's more like taking a picture than having a relationship with.
Hmm.
Okay? So you just simply notice it. You don't have to have a conversation with yourself about it or do anything about it, or you don't even have to have an opinion about it. Just notice that's where it went, and mm-hmm. then you come back. And as we were talking with the previous caller, as you do that more, you're learning to direct your attention. You're changing your relationship with attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're up walking around in your life, your attention has a habit of being with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a habit, which is kind of a strange way to use that word, but it's very much what's going on. You have a habit of being present, of being in your body, feeling the breath, and noticing where your attention is.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you're noticing where your attention is that you are, now my fingers are making those little quote marks in the air,
mm-hmm.
you are identified with awareness as you walk around in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the same way that when your attention wanders and you're sitting on the cushion and you have that little snapshot of where it went, you get little snapshots of your life. So there you are reacting to a particular piece of music, say. or somebody walks down the street and you notice you have a reaction to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it, again, you don't have to do anything with that. You just become aware of it.
Mm.
Okay?
Okay.
So there's nothing to do. There's nothing to fix. You don't have to find out who you are so you can do something about her.
Yeah.
Okay? It's just simply noticing. And you know from having practiced awareness as long as you have that when you become aware of something, it changes you.
Yeah.
So you become aware, say, female to female here, I can project this and be, you know, like 99% accurate. You look at another woman and you compare yourself to her. Yeah?
Well, sometimes, yeah. Yeah,
sometimes,
I guess,
yeah.
So.
It's just a, you know, it may not be a big, again, it's not a big conversation, but it's just an awareness.
Yeah.
Of how she looks, how she's dressed, how, you know, it's just a boom.
I have an opinion.
We have an opinion, right?
For sure. We are just
trained to have those opinions.
Right.
And so each time you become aware of that, you are actually, in that awareness, disidentified from that opinion. And in that awareness, you have a sense of what conditioning is doing to you moment by moment by moment by moment with these opinions. And so you don't have to get a beating because you were judgmental of somebody else. Okay?
I'd be beaten down if that were the case.
Yeah, and it's not
pulp.
Because you have, in that split second, you have seen everything that there is to see about what happens in that judgment and comparison. And what will happen increasingly is that you simply lose interest in pursuing that.
Mm.
Because it was only happening in unconsciousness in the first place.
Mm.
In consciousness, you don't want to do it, and it simply falls away.
Mm. So I don't have to try so hard.
You don't have to try at all. It's the most relaxing way to go through life.
Mm-hmm.
Just relax all your muscles. Don't think about anything. Let everything be just exactly as it is. That's all there is to it.
The subpersonality thing. I mean, I think I try to figure out all of this stuff. I mean,
mm-hmm. And you don't need to.
I don't need. Okay.
You just notice in the same way. You know, you get up in the morning and you walk to your closet because you're going to put something on.
Right.
You're going to put some clothes on, and you just notice what you want to put on. You just notice. And you can guess that somebody is there picking those clothes out.
Uh-huh.
And then you look and see what you want to eat. And somebody is there making that decision. And somebody says, I want blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, we begin to get a feel for this kind of parade of characters that's going through our lives. Just... now this person is doing this, this person wants to do that, somebody turns on music, somebody else says, I can't stand that, turns it off. Okay, I think I just want to sit and read tonight. I want to see a movie. I want to get a little work done. I feel like gardening, you know, just
uh-huh.
notice
uh-huh.
how those shifts happen and get a feel for what you're like when you're when you're identified with those different aspects of the personality. And there's no problem with any of them because in the way I'm describing it, you are noticing them from awareness.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Good. So just relax and enjoy it.
Thank you very much. I hope to see you in May if they end up having the week-long retreat.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure we're going to have it. I hope you're there.
I'm wanting to be there.
Okay, good.
So I'll see you.
All right, thanks.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Trish. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have two more callers lined up, and we have about 15 or so minutes or so. We got a couple extra minutes tonight.
Good.
I'd like to welcome Scott from Palo Alto, California. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hey, Michael. Hey, Sherry.
Hey,
hi.
Scott.
Hi.
What's going on?
It's going okay. I'm struggling with something that if it wasn't so painful, it'd be really funny.
Ah.
So what's happening is I'm engaged. I'm going to be married in a few months.
Uh-huh.
And in the last month or so, the guy who proposed, I don't know where he went.
Uh-oh.
And the guy who's here now is not engaged and basically just wants to be outrageously single.
Uh-huh.
And it's really painful, and it's a real struggle because when I'm going through something where sort of it only involves me, it's easier to sit with it and, you know, let it sort of work through at whatever pace it's going to work through. But now I feel that there's a voice in my head saying, you know, you got to get centered, and you got to get centered now, buddy. And it's very difficult to actually sit with this.
Yeah, and the inability to sit with it just makes everything that much worse, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you've got to get through this, you've got to get through this, you've got to get through this, you've got to get through this. Is not the way to get through something. Right?
Yeah, and yeah, it's absolutely true. And the funny part to me is every time I try and bring stuff up to my fiancé and explain in, you know, some way why I'm not the right person, she's not the right person, this isn't the right world, you know, she'll say something. She'll come up with a solution to whatever it is that I'm bringing up. And it's so frustrating that she doesn't understand how correct my conditioning is.
Right. Oh, and there's that sinking feeling she could be the right woman for you.
Yeah, it's very disturbing.
Yeah, yeah. And so she understands that you have switched sub-personalities. And she's now in relationship with somebody new.
I don't know if she would articulate it like that, but at some level, I think that's probably true. Yeah.
Uh huh. Because yeah. that feels really important to understand in the relationship.
Hmm. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah. Well. You know, I suspect that an awful lot of relationships end because two people got together and then they stopped being those two people.
Right.
And those two people wanted to be in relationship with each other, and who they become, those people have no interest in it. Now, if people, you know, there is a certain argument for that till death do us part business, because what I think people were trying to lock in is, if you stay with this long enough, sooner or later you're going to cycle back into those two people who wanted to be together.
Right.
And I think people who have been together for a while would say that that's true. And realizing that each one of you is bringing... Oh, let's be conservative. 20 fairly dominant personalities to this union.
Yep.
That is a big cast. You know, if we were doing a stage play and we had 40 parts, you know, we would say that's a good-sized cast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so bringing conscious awareness to this, that these are, you know, these are the main characters that I'm dealing with on a regular basis. Who are the main characters you're dealing with?
Right.
And because I need to know who all of these people are. I need to know them really well so that when you walk through the door, I can say, oh, hi, so-and-so, and not expect that it's going to be the person who left in the morning.
Right.
And to understand, as you're experiencing now, personalities don't necessarily come in for a few minutes and then leave.
Right.
We can be in personalities for days, for weeks, for months.
Right.
Yeah.
It seems like it would take a lot of, maybe this is my conditioning talking, it probably is. It would take a lot of courage to have that conversation because it's almost like presupposes that I'm okay with that sub or those sub personalities that really don't feel like they're engaged.
Right.
And that, like, it's so okay that I'm even willing to admit it.
Yeah. Well, you know, Scott, to me, it's not a matter of it's okay.
Yeah.
It is.
Right. Well, that's true.
Yeah. And I would encourage you to consider that it's going to be true all your life.
Really?
Assuming you get married. Which
are you sure of that?
Yep. Assuming you get married, which I'm betting you will.
Okay.
Periodically, throughout your married life, you're going to find yourself identifying with a part of yourself that has no interest in being married.
It's so funny. Well, there is such a strong, it's probably, I don't know what it is, but there's such a strong belief in my head that once you get past a certain point, this doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty insidious because...
Yeah, it is.
Because if what you're saying is true, and I have every reason to believe it is, that means that when it does happen, I'm clearly the wrong person because the right people, they got past that point.
That's right. And what it will mean, of course, is you need to leave this relationship.
Right.
Yeah, which, of course, is what conditioning is angling for all along. But if we get it, that no matter where we are in life, you know, you have a job and you love your job, love your job. You're just the luckiest person in the world to have this job. And one day you're going to wake up and hate it.
Okay?
Because we have in us a part of us for kind of everything.
Ooh.
And sooner or later, that person is going to arise. Now, if we know this, then we can say, oh, okay, well, part of me is here who really doesn't want to do this.
Right.
And it doesn't mean there's anything wrong. It doesn't mean I need to do anything differently. It means, of course, that I am required to come to center and mentor that part of myself rather than trying to get away from that part of myself, and in doing that, just fall right into the trap of being that person and then trying to navigate my life from inside that personality.
That's key, because what I've been noticing is that, you know, the first thing that happened was there was a piece of me that was scared.
Oh, yeah.
And I get that. This is a scary thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then instantly... there was just like a whole, like a door opened and a ton of subpersonalities came in, none of whom were really interested in being engaged or whatever. And what was lost in the whole thing was the original aspect of myself that was scared.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That is really...
That part, there's been like no room for compassion or anything. It's just been this endless... series of this isn't enough of that.
Yeah. That is really subtle and really important.
Yeah.
So if you can get to the place of mentoring him, the one who's really afraid,
yeah,
then it's not actually necessary to give quite so much those other people don't have quite so much force behind them.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. You know, I don't know. Maybe this is just me being self-disclosing, but I don't know anybody in a relationship who periodically, regularly, however, you know, whatever it is, doesn't look around and say, wouldn't life be better if I were single?
The thing, you know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody about that, and then it was funny because when you're single, you always think, wouldn't life be better if I was together with somebody?
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's just like one of those inviolate laws of nature.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so, again, if we learn that the name of the game is coming back to center and mentoring, then, now this is the really high-level part. You can actually be there in a centered place when your partner hits that spot.
Yeah.
Which will happen.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We always think, you know, we're the ones. You know,
I definitely
I'm the one
that.
Wanting out of this relationship. But sooner right. or later, the other person gets there too.
Right. Right. This has been extremely helpful.
Good. Good. I'm glad.
Thanks, Sherry. Thanks Michael.
Thanks, you're Scott. Welcome. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Scott. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have just a couple minutes left, and we have another caller.
All right, and this is unless we can do this very quickly, then we'll have a, extend an invitation to this extremely patient person to start off next week's show.
I'd like to welcome Rebecca from Texas. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Sherry.
Good evening, or howdy.
No, good evening's fine. Thanks.
Good evening will do.
Hi, Michael.
How are you doing?
Hi. So and I'm told we have plenty of time. So.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, okay. So I don't have to change the whole tenor of this, huh?
We can relax and just enjoy ourselves.
Okay. Well, that actually, the caller before was very helpful and interesting. And I saw something recently that was just very powerful that I wanted to share. And I am getting out of a relationship, you know, a long-term relationship. And I saw this moment when I got to see how it is that I leave myself.
Hmm.
And it was just very powerful just to actually get to watch that happen.
Uh-huh.
And what happens is that I was, you know, it's, you know, we were having a pretty painful conversation, and I was just really present to my partner's pain.
Mm-hmm.
And his expressing, you know, expressing that pain. And I just watched myself leave where I was and go and be what this part thought he wanted me to be.
Uh-huh.
And
I just want to stop and underline that because the phrasing is so perfect. Go and be what part of you thought he wanted.
Yeah.
Or needed.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. And what happened then was just terrible, adding insult to injury, because what came in a little while later, it wasn't immediately, but later, was the self-hate that was saying how codependent, how phony, what a liar, how wimpy, you know, all of those mm-hmm. really sweet things that conditioning can say to us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like the caller was saying, he saw, you know, right before me, was what got lost in all of that was the part who was scared or something, and that, you know, that prompted the initial movement, I think.
Uh-huh. The thing that you that happened to you, whatever, that caused you to choose leaving yourself and deciding what somebody else wants or needs and attempting to provide that instead of staying in some sort of authentic place for yourself.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whatever that was got lost.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever that original kind of trauma was that resulted in abandonment of the self.
Yeah.
And then going through all these convoluted projections and assumptions and beliefs and failure to check it out and all of that. And then the crowning touch,
mm-hmm.
being beaten for having done all of that.
Yep. Yep.
It's very sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
I got to see all that.
And very good to see.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it almost makes the whole ordeal worth it to have seen that.
Mm.
I mean, I don't want to, you know, I don't know if that's kind of hyperbole, but it just, that's how incredibly good it is to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if this is going to sound kind of Pollyanna-ish, but it does seem that these kinds of situations in life are what it takes for us to see things at this kind of deep level.
Yeah.
Because if we can just cruise along, we will.
Yeah. You know, when you said the word trauma, I noticed a little reaction in me that I kind of wanted to go back to and not just pass over that, because it really, there was something,
mm-hmm.
some trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something causes us to leave ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not a, that can sound so narcissistic, you know, that you should go through life just focused on you. And that's not what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about being with yourself, being living life inside you,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which is the way we start out. And then something, usually a trauma, causes us to give ourselves up in order to try to get what we need from someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the rift or the word isn't coming to me, but that's what we then spend our lives trying to heal.
Trying to heal. Yeah.
Yeah, trying to get back to our own heart, to our own authenticity.
And it's, as you said with Trish, I think it was, once you see it, it's all different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not that conditioning won't try to close it all over and pretend it never happened and talk you out of it. And
sure.
And it, as you've described, you know, give you such a bloody beating that... you know, you never want to go back and consider any of this again.
Right. You'll never want to look again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're not going to fall for that, are you?
Well, no. I mean, it's happened, and I'm telling it on the air, for God's sake. You know?
We have it in the archives.
Yeah. So clearly, it's not going to shut me up or keep me from looking. Thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for hearing it.
Well, thank you for calling.
Yeah.
Take care of yourself.
I will. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, another great show.
Yeah. Gosh, people are courageous, aren't they?
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
The willingness, the courage, it's really inspiring for me.
Yeah, if we could just see it, you know, when we're living it, if we could just see it directly, all self-hate, conditioning, just wouldn't have a chance.
Yes,
you could see the heart.
That's, yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Talk to you next week.
All right.
Good night.
Bye-bye.